Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're either listening or watching right now on talkradio.nyc. If you're just listening in on talkradio.nyc, then you can watch the live video if you just go to facebook.com/talkradionyc, just all one word, and you can see us live. So tonight's episode, got a few things to talk about, doing a little bit of hot takes, you know, my take on a few things, everything from Actors Equity and they're changing their membership requirements. Talk about Simone Biles and her dropping out of the team competition yesterday and the U.S. team finishing with the silver. And also going to touch on the Big 12 and the situation with Texas and Oklahoma, essentially notifying them, I want to say yesterday or today, that they will not be renewing their contract in 2025 for the media rights. And they have reached out to the SEC, according to ESPN, and asked for the open discussion for them to join the SEC. And what that means just in the world of athletics, particularly college athletics, as the NCAA and college athletics are completely evolving at this point, maybe faster than anybody saw, and maybe faster than it can handle. We're gonna find out one way or the other. It's one of those situations where we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. But either way we do it, we're gonna get it done. So we're gonna talk about that. Second half of the show, as per normal or per usual, I got special guest on second half, and it's gonna be longtime friend, former coaching colleague, Mike Cunningham. He's going to be on the show. He's now the national sales manager for Gill Athletics, which is one of the largest track and field equipment companies and suppliers in the world, but they also do more than that. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to talk about the evolution here of college athletics, because he was a former NCAA Division I coach, just like I was. And we're also going to be talking about just life stuff, because he's a pay it forward kind of guy. And he's got a unique outlook on that and helping people, and as do I. And so we share that in common. And so we're going to have him on for the second half of the show. But getting back to the main discussions that I wanted to touch on tonight, and kind of like the, you know, Kevin's hot takes, if you want to call them, is the first thing is Actors Equity. So if you're an actor, let me put this way. If you're an actor like I am, where you're a commercial actor or you're a television or movie actor, film, then your union, your guild that you're trying to earn membership into is the Screen Actors Guild, SAG. And if you are a stage or theater actor or stage manager, then what you, musical theater, whether it's opera, plays, musicals, Broadway, that's called the Actors Equity Association. And by joining AEA, you effectively are joining that union. Okay. Now you can cross over. There is a means by which you can join one union by being a member of the other union. And so this actually just came up, I want to say on the 21st. I don't even know what today is. I lose track. I think today is 27th. So this just happened, I think, Wednesday. Or maybe a week ago today, Tuesday. But Actors Equity came out and said that they are now going to, until I want to say 2023, they are opening up their membership into the union under what they're calling open access. Okay, so it's not open enrollment where just anybody willy-nilly can just join it. But they're open access. And to put it into context for people who aren't actors, because obviously a lot of people that watch this show or listen to the podcast are not in the world of acting. They're the world of athletics, which is another part of my life, or the world of business. In order to join, like for me, in order for me to have earned my Screen Actors Guild membership, it's incredibly difficult. I mean, between that and Actors Equity, these are two of the hardest unions to earn your membership. You can't just join. You have to earn your way in. And there's a couple of ways in SAG that you can earn a way in. Now, one way is that you can do it the way that I did, which is that you are a non-union actor who lands a union gig, and you are then giving it your TAP Heartlead in. And so you're offered membership because you took the place of a union person in a principal role. That's how I got it. Or you can actually earn your way in by being a background extra, which I don't do. And I'm not knocking being a background extra. We talked about it last week when I had Bella Hibbs on from Good Faith Casting. But background acting and acting are not the same thing. Now, it's hard to convince somebody that only does background work of that, and that's fine. That's their opinion. But obviously, they don't have any lines. So you're just pantomiming. Okay, so you can earn your way into SAG by being a non-union background actor, which, again, not knocking it, it's just not for me. But you can earn your way in. You have to get three vouchers. And essentially, layman's terms, what that means is that as a non-union background person, you need to fill a slot of a union person three times on a union shoot and get the waiver so that you can turn those into SAG and become eligible. Okay. Essentially, those are the two ways in. Not easy. I mean, it's not even easy on the extra side of things. I mean, you could toil around for years and not get those vouchers. So in Actors Equity, you had to land a role in an equity show as a non-union person to earn your way into Actors Equity, which is equally, if not harder than earning your SAG membership, because there are far fewer opportunities and you are 100% completely at the mercy of the people that are doing the casting of these musicals or these shows. And when you go to audition as a non-union person, basically you could sit there and have to wait all day. Of course, my cats are messing around right now. You could sit there and wait all day at an open call and not even get into the room to even have a shot at being cast because all of the spots in front of you were filled by union people. So they've opened it up now for open access. So open access, what that means is that now, as long as you have worked on a professional theater project within the U.S., okay, the scope of AEA, and you were paid for it professionally, you have to be able to show that you were paid for it, then you can now join Actors Equity even though you've never gotten an equity job. So here's what's a little confusing to me. I actually reached out today to Actors Equity, to their press contact. I haven't heard back yet. It is what it is. But the thing that is a little bit odd to me is the entire purpose of a union is to strengthen it, once you join the union, is that you then are on a different playing field than non-union people, and you have collective bargaining, you have all these benefits and these kinds of things, and people toiled for years and years to earn that. Now all of a sudden you can now join Actors Equity having simply been paid $50 to be in a non-union theater gig, in Hoboken or wherever, and you now are granted the same access, the same membership that people who have been in the union for years and it took them years to get and have. So to me, and I'm not in Actors Equity. Right? And so in reality, it doesn't affect me or my life, not one iota, because I'm a SAG person. But to me, it kind of defeats the entire purpose of the union when you now are just opening up to non-union gigs. And now all of a sudden, people can join the union. They can join AEA, right? And get all of those benefits, having never, ever landed an equity job. So now, Actors Equity said in their release and in subsequent articles that have been written in various publications that this wasn't driven by money. Well, I mean, in reality, okay, you know, obviously they're making the argument that that they want to open it up because it's so hard to get into, that people are underrepresented from certain groups and et cetera. But this is the same complaint that people have had for decades about AEA. And now all of a sudden, when they're in a money crunch, they're changing it and just opening it up. But then they're saying, well, it has nothing to do with money, which is a little odd because, you know, obviously it's been the same argument for all these years. So the other thing is, because you can join SAG if you have membership in AEA, what that now means is that somebody can just go out, put on a theater gig, sell tickets at a 200-seat theater or a 300-seat theater, pay the people that are in it $50 a pop for the performance, because there is no minimum. That's what AEA says, there's no minimum. And then they become Actors Equity. And then all of a sudden they can now join SAG because it is a sister union, even though what they've really done is absolutely nothing to accomplish the whole purpose of being in the Screen Actors Guild or in AEA. So that's my little take on it. I mean, it's just my opinion. I, you know, right, wrong, you know, it doesn't really matter because it's just my opinion. But I'm a little skeptical, particularly when they say it had nothing to do with money, when it's been the same argument all this time. We're going to take our first commercial break. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking about Simone Biles and the Olympic gymnastics team. And we're also going to be talking college sports. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have my buddy Mike Cunningham on. So you're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc. Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back, everybody, to Coffee Talk XL and our second segment here. You're listening on talkradio.nyc. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and I'm here every Tuesday live from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and then you can catch the podcast either by going to the same websites that you watch it now on Facebook or on talkradio.nyc, or you can go to Apple, Spotify, download the podcast. Admittedly, I'm like about a week behind in uploading the podcast, but hey, man. I live a crazy life. Matter of fact, tomorrow, as a short aside on my life, I've got to fly back to my place in LA because I've booked a fitness shoot for a fitness product and commercial that's on that we're filming on Thursday. So I got to fly back tomorrow for the weekend. And also, when you get ready for fitness shoots, if you're not in that world or, you know, fitness models go through the same thing, bodybuilders go through the same, there's actually, so when you see people in these fitness, commercials or these fitness, things, and they look the way that they do, they only look like that. Trust me, you only look like that for about 48 hours. And a big part of that is that you're kind of manipulating your body over a few days in terms of the amount of water that you're taking in, and then you're gradually cutting it back and loading up on protein, and then you're loading up on carbs. And, you know, it's this whole like 7 to 10 day process. And I can tell you right now, I'm incredibly thirsty and I'm incredibly hungry. But hey, man, you got to look as good as you can. It is what it is. So I got to fly out and be in, at my place in LA for the weekend. But anyway, getting to the whole Simone Biles and what's happened here in terms of her dropping out. And this is just my take. Now, I've been in high level athletics since the 1990s. I mean, I've coached 5 athletes that were ranked in the top 25 in the world. I've coached an American record holder, coached people to world championships, to European championships, et cetera. So I've been in that world, and I know the kind of pressure that not only do these athletes put on themselves, which is a tremendous amount of pressure. You're not going to become this world-class athlete by accident. Okay. This is not something that just happens because you're talented. You put a lot of pressure on yourself, and that pressure leads to discipline and et cetera. But then you're also getting a lot of pressure from the outside, whether it be coaches. I mean, I was a coach. I know that I put pressure on people, you know, maybe sometimes too much. I'm just being honest with myself, you know, the media and everything else. So Simone, who is arguably, in my mind, I mean, I'm not an expert in gymnastics, but to me, if she's not the greatest gymnast of all time, she's one of the top 2 gymnasts of all time. But in my mind, she's the greatest gymnast of all time. You know, you're great when not only have you done things that have never been done before, and then they subsequently name those moves after you, but they actually actively change the rules to make it harder for you because you're so good. And that's what's happened with her. So after the vault, something happened in the vault in the women's team competition, and she made the decision to pull out. Now, for the most part, people have been supportive. Obviously, there is a certain cross-section of people who've never competed in anything in their life, usually, outside of a JV baseball, you know, or their men's softball league. That's usually who these people are that get online anonymously. You know, she should be able to handle the pressure, et cetera, et cetera. For the most part, people have been supportive, and there needs to be support. Here's the way that I look at it. Now, when you get to that level, and whether it's in athletics or in acting or whatever, once you get to this highest level where you're operating at the highest percentile of other humans, and obviously highest percentile of your own talent level, which is always the goal. Generally speaking, these people have an unwavering belief in themselves. Now, what I mean by that, so in 2000, Sydney, Australia Olympics, they did a study of Olympians across the board. Every sport, every denomination, every gender, everything, right? And the one common denominator that they found in these Olympians, the thing that made them different than non-Olympians, was this unwavering belief in themselves. Okay. And so I've always always known that in order to get to that point, you have to have this belief in yourself. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't doubt yourself. It doesn't mean that every single day you wake up, you know, spitting firecrackers, you know, crapping cannons. All right. There's days where you doubt yourself. There's days where you don't feel good. Hell, there's days where you don't even want to do it. Doesn't matter how good you are at it. And what makes Olympians and world-class athletes different is the fact that they are able to compartmentalize. They're able to take that doubt, that day where you're actually scared or worried or doubting yourself, and you can put it in its proper place quickly, and you can rebound from that and bounce back. So the measure of her mental strength, the measure of Simone Biles, isn't in whether or not she decided to pull out yesterday. That's not what she should be judged on ever, because A of all, this isn't a light decision. Let's be honest. Okay. This isn't some decision she made willy-nilly. She knew the consequences of making this decision. She had to weigh those out. She also had to weigh out, what if I go into these other subsequent events and I'm still feeling whatever I'm feeling today? I woke up today and this is how I feel right now. The thing about gymnastics, particularly her, right? These moves are incredibly difficult. I mean, she invented some of these moves, right? And not only are they incredibly difficult, what makes them difficult is, I don't know, they're dangerous. And if you don't feel 100% confident that you're going to be able to pull it off, that doubt can lead to not just screwing up. This isn't football where it's an interception. Well, I'm going to get another chance in four downs, right? This could be a life-altering. If not, honestly, life-ending, should she break her neck because she's off for whatever reason. So she had to take all of that into account and make the decision what was going to be best for her in that moment, and honestly, best for everybody around her in that moment, and that was to pull out. So in my opinion, the measure of her and her strength and her belief in herself isn't in that snapshot of time where she made the decision to pull out. What will define her? Well, A of all, she don't need to prove anything to anybody, man. This is one of the greatest athletes of all time. Okay. She don't need to prove anything to anybody. But the measure of her and her strength and her belief in herself is tomorrow and the next day, how she bounces back from that. And how she carries herself. And my guess is it'll be impeccable. She'll be, if she decides to continue in gymnastics, awesome. She's still, you know, she's always going to be the greatest gymnast of all time. And I honestly think that it, like I said, there's a certain cross-section of people that are quick to judge. Chances are, and you see these people on Twitter, they've never done anything in their entire lives. They've never even been in a position to fail, because they're so fearful of failure anyway that they wouldn't even put themselves in a they wouldn't even take the chance to put themselves in that position. So that's my take on that. Quickly, before we go to the next break, and then after the break, I've got my buddy Mike Cunningham coming on from Gill Athletics. The Big 12 and the SEC and Texas and Oklahoma. And Mike, we'll talk about this in a minute briefly, but this is just another piece of this giant puzzle that is changing and evolving in the world of college athletics right now. This, as a matter of fact, I mean, this is colossal. In the world of college athletics, this is colossal because, first of all, I can't imagine in a million years the Big 12 surviving. The Big 12 actually only had 10 teams in it. And now you're taking two flagship teams. I mean, you're taking University of you're taking Texas and Oklahoma off the table, and moving them to their rival. I mean, the rival of the. Well, I don't even think the SEC considers the Big 12 a rival, to be honest with you. But the Big 12 certainly considered themselves to be a rival of the SEC, but they're in each other's backyard. And what I think is going to happen, and this is just one piece as they're moving forward, I can't see a Power Five continuing to exist. I actually see, because Big 12 was one of those five, I actually see a four leagues developing with either 16 18 or 20 teams in each of these, and it's and they're going to have their own deals. Listen, honestly, from a business standpoint, because it doesn't affect my life, not one iota anymore. I'm not a coach. I think they're crazy to even stay with the NCAA. They right now, they could walk, grab BYU and Notre Dame with them, and take the entire television package away from the NCAA, and the NCAA will then be everybody else, which would be FCS at that point, and Division II and III. You know, and as a matter of fact, the way things are going now and the way the money is, I wouldn't be stunned. This probably wouldn't happen, but I wouldn't be stunned if we then just see the NCAA just become a non-scholarship, more non-scholarship than scholarship, if those 80 schools-ish move on and do their own thing. I can see college athletics now being more, particularly at the highest level. I'm not talking about Division III. Not that there's anything wrong with Division III, because I got a lot of Division III dudes that listen to this show. But at the highest NCAA level, I see it becoming more now essentially the minor league of whatever the professional outlet is in the various sports, whether it's the NFL, NHL, whatever it is. Because now these kids can go out because of the name, image, and likeness. They can go out and they can negotiate sponsorships. They can go out and make their own money while they're in school. They can be a millionaire, which the Alabama quarterback I talked about last week, dude hasn't played a single down yet. And he's going to make over $1 million before school starts and endorsements. He hasn't even played yet. So I see this is just one example of an ever-changing landscape, and I don't think that college athletics within the next 10 years is going to look anything like it does right now. We're going to be back after this commercial break. I'm going to have my buddy Mike Cunningham, who's the national sales manager for Gill Athletics and former college coach. He's going to be on here for the second half of the show. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc.
Do you feel uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everybody, to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on talkradio.nyc. And you can pick up the podcast on Spotify, Apple, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. I got my buddy, longtime friend, former coaching colleague, and now the national sales manager for Gill Athletics, Mike Cunningham on. Mike, how you doing, brother?
Man, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me, man. This is fantastic. And what a great shirt, by the way. I got to point that out, man. I love it. That's awesome. Where'd you get that? That's amazing.
Dude, I will say, and I'm going to give them a little free advertising right now. I got this from Throw Big, Throw Far. Do you follow them on it's the Madison Throws Club?
Joe Frontier, one of the best throws coaches around. He's been a guest on my podcast, of course. And I've been a guest on his. He's awesome.
Yeah. So I just ordered three shirts. And, when I did the order, here's the thing with me. And this is just a quick aside, right? It's tough with my body shape. It's tough to find a good t-shirt, bro, because whenever I have to go to film again, like this, I got to go film this fitness thing in LA this week, right? So the girl asked me, what size shirt do you wear? And I said, I'm going to give you the same answer I give everybody. Medium if I'm showing it off, large if I'm hiding it. I mean, so obviously I grabbed three mediums, but dude, I'm telling you, they fit great. They feel great. I mean, and I'm loving the different logos on them. So a shout out, if you want one of these, go to throwbigthrowfar.com and they got some really cool stuff on there. But speaking of your podcast, it's really interesting. I was a guest on your podcast, obviously. This was quite a while ago now. But you've had how many episodes have you had? It's over 100 now.
Yeah, over 100 individual guests on the show. We also run a really popular YouTube show called Athletics LLC. We run those as an audio only. They do a YouTube show quite considerably like you, and then we run the podcast side. But as far as individual coaches, over 100. It started back in January of 2020, like pre-pandemic is when I started this thing.
And basically, this is an opportunity not just for us, but for you to get to know some of these different coaches. I mean, really incredible stories on where these people have come from. I mean, you got the one coach that was on there that didn't even have a track and he had a track meet. Just some really interesting stories and how people got into the business. You know, let me ask you, because you were a longtime coach, right? And now you're on the dark side. You're in the civilian world, just like I am, right? In your opinion, what do you think the biggest thing that's changed about college coaching since we were coaches over 10 years ago?
Yeah, so I'm so glad that I was a college track coach for 10 years. I mean, there's so much, friendship and lessons and things like that I learned. But maybe I'm also so glad that I am no longer a college track coach. My last year of coaching was 2005. So if you kind of cycle back, 16 years ago, Facebook was only on campuses. So it wasn't like it is today. We certainly wouldn't be able to do something like this today. Back then, there was no Twitter, TikTok, all that kind of stuff. Cell phones were still fairly not around, and they weren't smartphones exactly. Right. And now, fast forward to today, with all of that social media, and then you also add into name, image, likeness, transfer portals, etc. I mean, it's so different. Like I really enjoy, pretty much my whole job is to talk to coaches and specifically college coaches around the country. They'll tell me like horror stories that are going on, and it's a little bit like, oh, thank you for telling me that, coach. Let's say that I did the right thing 16 years ago,
Well, I've talked to a lot, I still am well connected in that world. And a lot of my friends are still coaches. And I'm not going to lie to you. A lot of guys that are still coaching, they actually wish that they could get out, but they don't have an exit plan. And this is something that I've told my coaching friends, even if you do love it, dude, you should be thinking about the next step. Life isn't checkers, man. You're not just thinking one move to the next. Life is a game of chess, and you need to be thinking two or three moves ahead and coming up with an exit plan on how you can then take all the lessons you learned as a coach and apply them. Because, am I right? You can draw some huge straight lines from your life as a college coach to being successful and taking on a national role with such a huge company. What kind of connections have you made with that?
Yeah, I think, you know, two things, Kevin, what you mentioned there. You know, one is I wish coaches would do it differently, meaning, you know, you talk to most coaches, you know, they rightfully will complain about the 24/7 life of a coach. You know, you, if your kid calls you at 10 p.m. or 2 a.m., you have to be there to answer them. You're the academic advisor. You're the PO sometimes, you know, things like that. I wish, and some coaches do it right. What I would say, right. But I wish they would do it differently. If we would all just take a step back and realize, well, the title of coach is one of the most precious titles you can give. It's one of, that I can think of, only two professions in this world where you get a title. Right. So
yeah,
you don't talk to your attorney and call them Attorney Chuck. You don't talk
right.
to, but you call your doctor, Dr. Smith
and coach.
Exactly.
So it's, I've said that too for years.
Precious yeah. title, but it doesn't have to be everything. Parent, brother, sister, etc. So you know, I just wish, you know, they would just put themselves, the mental side of it. You know, I heard you talking about Simone Biles with the mental health and things like that. You know, coaches need to concern themselves with their own mental health, physical health, financial health, relationship health. There's so many things that a coach has to be doing for his or herself to put their life. If they want to coach for 50, 60 years, well, you better be doing the right things. Now, as far as the parallels between, you know, coaching and business, yeah, you know, there's a lot. Recruiting is selling. And no matter what you do in this world, you are selling. If you don't think you're a salesperson, you're wrong. Sorry.
Yeah.
You have to sell yourself to your spouse. You have to sell yourself to dates. You have to sell yourself for jobs, to get the jobs, etc. So, you know, there are a lot of parallels, and I felt like I was a pretty well-known recruiter. Like, that was kind of one of my strong suits out there. And really, at the end of the day, it's about connection with people. You know, that networking term, but it's about making connections with people. And that's kind of what I did as a coach, was it, whether it was to high school coaches and parents and the kids and themselves. And now I just do it on a coaching level to serve them, to, you know, now on just an equipment basis.
Right. Let me ask you something about the whole role of Gill Athletics within the world of track and field. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys also, track and field is not the only sport, or am I wrong on that?
No, you're exactly right. So the company is kind of 50-50. So there's Gill Athletics, which most people would know for track and field. We're the world's largest track equipment manufacturer, so we make more track stuff than anybody else out there. And then the other side is Porter Athletics, and that side of the business is very basketball and volleyball heavy. So if you walk into a gym, all the ceiling suspended basketball goals and hoops, that's probably a Porter Athletic goal. And even more so in the track and, you know, multi-purpose facilities, those curtains that go down to keep the balls from going onto the track. And stuff. Yeah, that's all. We manufacture all that actually right there in this facility you see behind me, if you're watching us on the video.
Wow. And where is that facility, by the way?
So we're in Champaign, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Good old University of Illinois.
Yeah. Now, is there some sort of connection between Illinois and Gill, or is it just so happen to be that that's where you are?
No, man, that's a really good question, because it's part of our authenticity and our heritage. You know, 100 plus years ago, 1918, the head coach at University of Illinois was Harry Gill. He was I think he was the Olympic all-around champ. Back then, it was kind of like a horse riding, some kind of track event and something else. It was kind of a weird decathlon-esque type event. He was Canadian. And so he was coaching the University of Illinois. He got tired of not having good sources to buy or, you know, to purchase track equipment. So he started making his own. His very first thing was ash javelin. So ash wood javelins. That was his first thing.
No kid.
Yeah. And then went on to, you know, hurdles, starting blocks, bamboo poles back then, the whole nine. Interesting fact about Harry, he actually started the first NCAA championship. So around, I can't believe it was 1919 or 1917. I get the years mixed up. He got a bunch of his coaching buddies. He literally wrote the book on track and field, the book they used to do in the classes back then. So he's very well connected. He got all the track coaches that he knew around and said, hey, why don't we pit ourselves against each other and have a national championship? And that was not only was that the very first NCAA track and field championship meet. It was the first NCAA championship meet. There was no other, there wasn't a tennis championship back then. There wasn't a football, of course, basketball. This was the very first championship. And Harry Gill started it all, man, right here in Urbana, Illinois, which is the same as Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah, well, yeah, essentially, yeah, yeah. It's like Ottawa Hills and Toledo, yeah. But that's really interesting. So it's kind of like he was essentially the Phil Knight-ish of that equipment. And whereas, of course, Phil Knight and Nike and Bowerman, started Nike in their own backyard.
$1 billion difference, but yes, that's a very good analogy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, and I want to talk about this when we come back from this commercial break, is that what I'm fascinated about is, so you've got such a niche, you're only working outside the Porter thing, you're only working with track and field and supplying track and field equipment, and there is a finite number of facilities, so one would think that it would be tough to continue to stay in business when you have only X number of potential customers that you can reach, but yet you've existed for 100 years, in that world, So when we come back from this commercial break, I want to touch on that. And then I want to talk about your views on, because we share a commonality in wanting to, be better humans. I my story. I'm in the second act of my life, and trying to make sure that I pay it forward. And you got a unique view on that. So I want to talk about that when we come back. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL. We'll be right back here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Podcast Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everybody, to the final segment here on Coffee Talk XL here on talkradio.nyc. And I got my longtime friend and former coaching colleague, Mike Cunningham, here. He is the national sales manager for Gill Athletics. So continuing on with what I was saying before the commercial, how is it, I mean, how is it that you guys are able to continue to be on the forefront when you have such a limited number of potential customers And it's not like you don't have competition. UCS, and there are other brands here. How do you think it is that you guys have been able to kind of stay as the number one supplier, even though you have a finite number of places to sell to?
Yeah, and sadly, we're not adding multiples, tens, hundreds of new programs on a yearly basis, unfortunately. So, you know, you do have a finite number of customers in that realm. So, you know, our president CEO has a really great motto that we use in our business side when we're doing our strategic planning, and that is healthy things grow. So we're always looking on how to grow. You know, when you grow your business, you get more opportunities for your employees to grow in the business and keep them in the business, et cetera. And you're able to serve people, your customer base in more ways. So some of the things that throughout the years that we've been able to do is, you know, adding different products to our line. So we can't remember how many years it was before. I've been here almost to the day, 15 years now at Gill Athletics. But we added our PowerMax line of equipment. So we added medicine balls and sleds and plyo boxes. That was something that we hadn't had in the past. About 20 years ago, we added and really grew our Gill Construction division of products. So when you build a facility, the sand pit forms, discus cages, hammer cages. I was blown away. I was a Gill customer before I came here. So I thought I knew Gill. You know, that's where I bought my blocks and all that kind of stuff, training aids. And again, if you're watching, you can kind of see this where I'm pointing over my shoulder here. I was blown away that we did football goals and like a whole lot of football goals. Like I was, that kind of just blew my mind. So then, you know, you just continued expanding. You know, we also sell a line of soccer goals. We also have field hockey and lacrosse, things like that. It was a little bit smaller. Baseball, we do dugouts, foul poles. Basically, in the way we look at manufacturing for us is if A, it's in the athletic space, B, institutional, meaning we're selling to high schools, middle schools, colleges, facilities like that, not really to end users. We're not, use Nike as an example. You know, we're not selling to mom who's buying some Nikes.
Right.
Mom's not going to come buy a football goal or pole vault from me. You know? So we look at that, where the market is for us. And then if it's metal, so we can cut it, weld it and paint it and make it into a product. If it's foam, so, you know, a lot of pits, a lot of wall padding, things like that, that we can cut it, encase it in vinyl, put some graphics on it. That's what we're about. That's what that whole factory behind me is. It's all about bringing in raw steel and aluminum. And it's almost like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, man. It's kind of they do their magic back in the back and out spits a pole vault standard. It's really amazing to see the process. Man.
Well, so basically, you know, cutting to the chase so that we can talk about some other things here. Gill Athletics continues to evolve. You have to continue your brand.
Absolutely.
And needs to continue to evolve because the market is continuing to evolve, but you still keep that laser focus. You're not ultimately going to be selling medicine balls to a bunch of old ladies, right? It's still institutions. It's just, hey man, they got other needs. We got a factory. We can pretty much build whatever we want. You know, like I say, if it's metal or foam, we can make it. And so let's make it, let's sell it. Bam.
Yep.
Yeah. And so getting to what, you know, I was talking about before the break also, you know, with your, you and I are alike, and I love to help people. I that's why I got into coaching in the first place. I sure the hell didn't get in for the money. Right. And, you know, to help people. I enjoy that. And I saw the other day, this is what triggered me. I was like, man, I got to get Mike on the show. You had posted something on either Twitter or I think it was on Twitter. Basically, you're saying, you know, explain what you mean by paying it forward. But you had a different way that you put it. Tell me what that was.
Yeah, it was on Twitter because I am all in on Twitter, man. I think I may spend 24/7 on Twitter because I love communication. It's just a great, quick way to talk and have interaction back and forth. So, yeah, it's one of those things. I don't post all original things. I'm not that creative and inventive, but I was sitting down just the other day, and I was just kind of thinking about that motto, that slogan about paying it forward, and that's a great altruistic saying, right? Like I always think about when paying it forward, I always think about the Starbucks, you know, hey, I'm gonna pay for the person behind me, and then that person pays for the next person, etc. But paying it forward instantly means that I have to receive value first before I give value to someone else, right? Like to pay it forward means I have to be the second person in Starbucks and someone had to have paid for my drink. And then, I got something for free. Now I'm going to pay for the next person and on down the line. You know, I just started thinking about, you know, instead of paying it forward, and that means I have to wait till I'm given something to give value. My kind of philosophy in life is I'm going to pay it first kind of guy. Like I'm going to be the guy I'm going to be the first guy at Starbucks who's paying for the next person, mainly because like I've been blessed. I mean, you know, the life I live, but let me tell you what, I hit the lottery. You know, beautiful wife, great kids, amazing company, awesome teammates. I'm in the sport of track and field, and I don't have the stress of athletes affecting my the gray hairs anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, it's all about like, what can I do for others with zero expectation of paying back? I'm not doing stuff for other people. So like, oh, don't forget, I'm gonna call that one in one day. It's like, hey man, I'm going to give you everything that I can because you deserve it. Honestly. I mean, people, whether it's my friendship with you and other people on Twitter and other aspects of what I do in this life, you deserve it, man, first and foremost. And so I'm going to do what I can. I'm not always gonna be able to do stuff, but whatever I can do, I'm going to give it to you and let you run with it. Have fun.
Yeah. I always would preach this when I was coaching, and I talked about this a little bit when I was on your show. What you should be working on in life, I think, is your legacy. What are people going to say about you when you're gone? Now, I lost track of that as most people that follow my career, right? They know I lost track of that. I lost track of, and everything became about me and my own success. And now in my second act in life, I put all the focus on, hey, I'll be successful. Because that's who I am, but I need to be a better person. I need to be a better human being. And how can I do that? And like what you're saying, hey, don't wait until somebody hands you something, you know, because really it's a net zero, right? So the dude pays. The dude pays for your, this is Grayson, by the way, who only cares about being around me when I'm on this show, man.
Cats are super selfish. Don't be a cat, right?
This dude, man.
Important with that, Kevin, you know, we're using the Starbucks example and things like that. It's not about dollars either. This is not about what giftings you can buy. You know, one of the things that I love, and, you know, I talked about Twitter, which I love, is I'll go on there and tell someone, hey, you're awesome. Like just randomly. Like, I'm just like, hey man, you have to be awesome. You know, anytime like, it melts my heart, and maybe it's because when I had kids, so I got real soft.
Yeah.
But when a coach, you know, shows a video or a picture of their kid, and I'm just like, oh man, what a good dad, what a good mom you are.
Yeah.
Cause you know, we struggle in our roles of mom, dad, brother, sister, son, daughter. We need more. There's so much negativity in the world. So we've got to flip that and combat that with positivity. And that's the giving that I preach as well, as far as doing it first. Just be a positive light. What's the worst someone's going to say? Hey man, Kevin, you're awesome. And you're like, no, F you, I'm not. It's like, all right, well, I still think you are. So I'm still good, you know?
Right. Yeah. You know, I think that particularly now, because life is hard right now. I mean, you know, people have been locked in and people have lost their entire livelihood and everything. Sometimes all somebody needs, man, is just somebody to tell you like it's going to be all right.
Yes.
You know, that we're in this together. And you know, there's too much of this going on in the world and politically, when in reality, dude, more now than any other time in our lifetime, we need to realize that we're all in this together. This is me against you, bro. It's us, right? Because we have all the stress of a pandemic, which we didn't create, right? But we have to deal with it.
Right.
Global warming, environmental change, all these things, right? I personally didn't create it, but we created it. We got to deal with it, you know? And we can't deal with it by just fighting each other over it. We've got to come together.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. You know, things that we didn't cause, we've got to deal with. That's a really good definition of leadership. That's what leadership is. You didn't cause it, but you're going to have to lead yourself and your people out of it. And it's only going to happen together. Sorry. If you think you're going to run this by yourself,
no, man.
It has never happened in the history of the world.
Yeah, exactly. Although we've had some people in high positions that kind of thought that they could change the entire world by themselves, but I'm not going to go down that road, man. Anyway, listen, Mike, great to see you, man. I wish you nothing but continued success. I know that our paths will continue to cross.
I hope
and,
so.
Yeah, and looking forward to it when we get to hang out again. I still owe you $20, by the way.
I was going to bring that up. That's right, baby. Yeah, I want that on the record.
Yeah, man. All right, man. Listen, I'll catch up with you again. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. This is Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro. We'll be back next Tuesday at 8 o'clock here on talkradio.nyc.
Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Did you know that nearly 1 in 5 adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.